Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to
Ray and Kay today, talking sports with friends.
Sports radio on the dial. Check us out. We'll make you smile.
Ray,
and they spit it, don't play. And we're talking nothing but the NFL and NBA. MLB.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the show. It's Friday. We're here to talk sports. You're listening to Ray and Tay today, and I'm Ray, Tom Raceland.
And I'm Tay, Eric Taylor. Can you hear me good?
Yeah, we got you loud and clear, Tay.
All right, cool. So give us a call, 718-664-9098. And this is a busy Friday show. We got a lot to talk about, Ray, with some crazy NBA stuff and trades. Maybe we should jump into that before we get to the NFL playoffs and stuff. Knock the NBA out of the way. Yeah. So,
looks like Tay may have dropped, but we've got a lot to talk about, like he said. We have a breaking news. We got a trade front. So maybe we'll start with that. So in the NBA, we've got the Boston Celtics completely emptying the cupboard and deciding that's it. They're starting fresh. They trade their leading scorer, Jeff Green, who had a player option, averaging 17 a game. They trade him to Memphis for Tayshaun Prince's expiring contract, $7.7 million. And a $5 million trade exception. And they also trade in a three-team trade Brandon Wright and get rid of him. And Danny Ainge is just stockpiling draft picks on the one hand. And on the other hand, you've got the Memphis Grizzly team that is, we're talking about this trade with the Celtics and the Grizzlies. Essentially, the Grizzlies trying to load up. They have the worst wing offensive production in the league, and then they get Jeff Green at 17 a game from the Celtics. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, first of all, I give kudos to Danny Ainge because he's stockpiling some draft picks, and that team was sort of, you know, they're a couple games behind Miami and Brooklyn in the East, but they're not really going anywhere. And I think Rondo going and Green going, Green's a nice player. But, you know, and Brandon Wright was just sort of just came there from Dallas, who was having a great season in Dallas, you know, shooting over 70% field goals and stuff like that. But that's a big move for the Suns, quiet as kept, because him and Alex Len give them some nice size up front with that three-guard rotation. But the Celtics, you know, Boston and Philly and New York, which you would never think, right, the sort of historic East Coast basketball cities are all sort of struggling and rebuilding, and it'll be interesting and fascinating for NBA fans to see which one of the three bounces back first. Obviously, if you look at the three, the Knicks might have the best player, but in terms of the best youth and future draft picks, you know, you might say it's the Sixers. But then Boston's right there. They've just acquired, you know, a lot of different pieces. So, you know, and then the question is, do you like Olenek and Marcus Smart and James Young and, you know, Pressey? We'll see.
Bradley.
I don't know. Yeah, so I don't know. It's more to me about, and we got to talk about the last, you know, even since Monday, even all the Cleveland moves and the whole Western Conference. The trade deadline, ladies and gentlemen, is not, you know, by the Super Bowl. It's February 19th after the All-Star break and All-Star weekends, you know, the 15th and all that coming up. But teams are trading, Ray, and just hustling and moving like it's, you know, the deadline's tomorrow. And so this is exciting for NBA fans, and it's kind of amazing. Threw this out there on Twitter. Do you almost wonder, with the Rockets, Mavs, Grizzlies, now the Suns, and OKC making a move, will the Warriors, Spurs, and Blazers do something? Because everybody else in the West is, like, anteing up, and they're they're going for it. So kudos to these GMs, even minor moves. But, you know, obviously these teams have made major moves. And I think the Grizzlies, really got better today. I mean, you would
for
agree
sure.
with that, right?
For
Jeff
sure.
Green.
Now,
is,
Jeff Green has got an expiring contract or a player option, I should say, for next year. Who knows? He might stay in Memphis. But here's the thing. Memphis may lose Gasol, but that's a whole other story. But for this year, Memphis just got a lot better. And this
and they're going for it.
In the Western Conference, exactly. This Andres in the Western Conference is crazy. And I bet you if you look, we should do that. We lost our intern, but if somebody, you know, wants to give us an intern, we're happy to take interns at Ray and Tay. If you want to work and learn some sports. But what I'd like to do is I'd almost like to take a snapshot every week in the Western Conference of the standings. And I'm from now until the end of the season, so what's that, mid-April? And I'm almost mm-hmm. willing to bet you that every week there'll be at least three or four teams in different positions. Just because the jockeying is going to be tremendous in that Western Conference. And like you
well,
said, five
you
of
never,
eight
yeah.
playoff teams are loading up. And the Spurs haven't really done anything. The Blazers and the Warriors haven't done anything. So we'll see.
No. And it's fascinating to watch, right, in the sense that Blazers and Warriors have dealt with some pretty serious injuries, and Robin Lopez and Bogut and David Lee in and out of the lineup. And then when you look at the teams that are making moves, you know, Phoenix, you know, it's, first of all, it's shocking that the Spurs and Clippers, you could throw in there too, at 6-7, will they make any moves? Phoenix, I mean, they made a minor move. The Clippers sent Jared Cunningham to the Sixers, but that's nothing major. So Phoenix is at the 8th seed. And we've spoken that we've both sort of felt that OKC would come back. Did you see the other night the way they got blown out by the Warriors and they've been having some bad losses? They're 17-19, and they're not looking good. And maybe Waiters will help. You know, they had he went to 23, couldn't wear 3, couldn't wear 13 because they want to keep the Harden trade away from everybody's brain. Couldn't wear 1, you know. So he's wearing 23, but can he play like 23? Because OKC being a solid 4 games out of the 8th spot, I don't know. Durant's not looking great. Do you know what I mean? I still would believe over time they'll make the playoffs, but Phoenix is like, we're not going anywhere, and they just got a little bit better. So we'll see. That's all going to be fascinating and the way that will play out. I want to ask you about the Cavs. So, yes, they get – you know, we already spoke about Shumpert and J.R. Smith, but what do you think about the Timofey-Mozgov deal, which they've been wanting to do for months, and they finally did it, you know, moving two protected picks for him to Denver?
So I thought it was a high price to pay for Timofey, excuse my play on words. But you know what? They're so desperate for size, and everybody
yeah.
knows it.
Especially without Varejao, you had to do it.
Yeah, once Varejao goes down, and you know that Kevin Love may not stick around. So even if it's just for this year and to convince, Love to stay, LeBron to, you know, I guess LeBron has an opt-out in a year and a half, they've got to make moves, and they needed size. But think about this Cavs roster, how in 2 weeks this Cavs roster looks totally different. You add,
amazing.
Ironically enough, what's the common link with all of them? They were all Knicks, right? Timofey,
yeah.
Iman Shumpert, and J.R. Smith. So all it's like Knicks East or it's the Knicks West.
I'll tell you though, that Knick trade with the Nuggets though, every day you do it because you know what? Gallinari and Chandler have not been great. Timofey's been, you know, average. Chandler's a solid player, but when you just look at injuries and health, those guys have not stayed healthy. So. You know, Melo has been.
The only issue I had with that is you knew Carmelo wanted to come to New York anyway.
Right.
So you could have had your cake and eaten it too. Even if you just got somebody to whisper in his ear and say, Carmelo, just chill. Be in Denver and come over as a free agent. But Carmelo got everything he wanted. He wanted to trade at the deadline at February. He got He got his max
money.
Wanted
the money. Yeah.
He got his extension. He got his Larry Bird rights extension. So. Carmelo got everything.
Now, let me ask you, since you're saying that, and we're not supposed to talk about a team with 5 wins, but I'll say this. If we don't say their name, I will say this. For him, next season, and, you know, people knock the Knicks, and they knock, you know, oh, you know, just because you have cap space. But Phil has freed up a lot. And the one thing I will say is, as bad as this season is, and it's bad, ladies and gentlemen, you know, and obviously being on TNT last night against the Rockets, oh, it was just ugly, you know. I mean, you know, but you like Langston Galloway, you know, Travis Ware. But could very easily this offseason sign Gasol and Rondo, and things could change like that. Well, I mean, what would you think? Now, granted, do you think for the Knicks to really win, Melo's got to be the second best player, not the first best player? Or does that really not matter? But if, I mean, if you get Gasol and Rondo, what does that put this team?
So if you get two other stars, I think if Pau Gasol, Rajon Rondo, and Carmelo are all on your team, Carmelo's probably Carmelo's probably still by a hair the best player on your team, but at least you have guys with completely complementary skills, right? It's not an Amari Stoudemire situation where they both like the ball and roughly the same places on the court, can't really play together. So the three of them can really play together. But I don't even know if that's good enough. The bigger question is, can the Knicks get both up, right? And then B, you know, there's always that little whisper about Kevin Durant. Would Kevin Durant, A, ever come to New York, and B, could Durant and Carmelo play together?
I don't think that would work.
Yeah, see, their games are not really complementary either, especially given that Carmelo likes to shoot now. I mean, he always likes to shoot, but he likes to shoot the ball. Or he likes to shoot threes.
To me, they're both threes. I don't think Melo's a four, and to me, Durant is OKC, maybe L.A., or the Wizards. I don't think anybody else really has a chance. And I would probably not even L.A. I would think it's staying at OKC or going home to Washington. I couldn't fathom. It'd be hard to fathom anywhere else. I mean, do you think any other teams have a real shot?
No. He signed so under the radar when he signed that extension with OKC. He doesn't seem like he wants the fanfare. And for a quiet, you know, I don't know, humble guy, he's making a lot of money off the court, right? So it's not like he says, oh, I'm stuck in OKC.
He's doing pretty good.
Not
yeah, he's not struggling.
He's endorsement money, right? He's got his, his
Sprint.
Commercials. And,
yeah.
So he's doing fine. So it's really about basketball for Kevin Durant. And where does he think he has the best situation and he can win? So you're right. I don't see him going many places. I don't know if he'd even want to come play for the Knicks, especially on the same team with Carmelo. But here's the one thing I will say about the Knicks. You know, we had a moratorium until they win 10 games. But I will say this. We're talking Knicks 2015, right? We're not talking Knicks 2014-15. We're talking 15-16. I will say this. Don't make a move just for the sake of making a move. So you have
the cap
space.
Yeah.
Don't just fill it up. Fill it up.
So don't sign Wes Matthews or Jimmy Butler to a max, although I like Jimmy Butler. And that's interesting because the Bulls are saying that they might give him a max contract. He's an all-star this year, Ray.
I have money to pay him. With Pau Gasol and of course, Rose making the max. And
I don't know. It must be that they're anticipating that the salary cap is going to go up, that they would be able to give him the max, go to the luxury, and then know the next season the cap will jump up significantly. This is interesting. I got to throw this at you because before we get to the NFL playoffs and then we're going to talk NFL and MLB Hall of Fame, real quick, Cuban was on Mike and Mike today, and he said something that your boy Tay has been saying forever, and it is about truly developing the NBA DL and having a minor league and not worrying about these kids, you know, because they're not really going to college. You know, if you're there just 1 year, you're not even in school the second semester. So doing something where it's 2 or 3 years, and for the guys that don't want to go to school, but they would have life skill training, and in the NBA DL cities, maybe do something, you know, where in the off season they could still get degrees from local colleges, you know, with maybe NBA support. You know, maybe increasing the salaries a little bit, you know, so these guys, you know, want to be. But basically every team having a minor league. That's the future of the NBA, Ray. And everybody's been ripping, and rightfully so, the development of AAU and the players and not having the skills that the European players are having, which is very fair and very true, although I think our best players are still better than their best players coming over. But What do you think about that, and do you feel that that's where it's going to go?
So a few things. Yes, I agree with Cuban. Sometimes, you know what? Cuban can be annoying, but sometimes he's very methodical and logical in the way he thinks. And he's like, look.
Oh, he's open-minded, and that's what you got to like that. It's refreshing.
We have a
and
product.
So is the commissioner. Yeah.
We have a product, and you know what? The feeder is college, and the college product is inconsistent. And you know what? The one-and-done kid, like you said, doesn't go to school. He's neither here nor there, right? He's not freshly out of high school where maybe he'll sit around and listen, and he's not really trained in the 4 years of college like back in the days. Well, even the big men, Tim Duncan, Shaq went 3 years. Even some of the big men used to stay longer. So
yeah. You
get this product that's raw athletically and doesn't really know how to play the game. So why don't we get an NBDL? Why, every other league has it. Baseball has it. Hockey has it. Football, to some degree, can't have it, right? They have to rely on the colleges, but they have to stay 3 years in college. So they
right, so it is like a minor league. I mean, let's be honest.
Right,
it's like
right.
They have it.
So I agree with Cuban 100%, but I wanted to mention something to you. I know this will warm your heart. You know, it's a little bit of, I mean, it's very sad, right? The whole situation is sad, but he will bring back some memories. We have a rest in peace throwout, speaking of Mark Cuban. I don't know if you read this today, but Roy Tarpley at age 50 died today. Yeah.
This
guy was in a lot of trouble with, you know, drugs and alcohol and everything. And really, I didn't realize it. He only played 280 games in the NBA. He was suspended for the better part of, you know, many, many seasons. He had that lifetime ban and everything.
You talk about talent.
When he was on, he was on. The number 6 overall pick from Michigan.
Yeah.
And remember, he was on a Dallas team that took a run at the Lakers.
Mm-hmm.
And went 7 games, and he was...
With Jeff
was
Donaldson and Aguirre, Harper and Rolando Blackman. Tarpley was our guy.
Yeah,
all right.
Tarpley, so at 50, rest in peace, Roy Tarpley.
Rest in peace, yeah. So, look, plenty of NBA talk. We'll get back to it. Obviously, the one thing that I got to say, though, is that whoever would imagine the two hottest teams are playing each other tonight, and it's not the Warriors or the Rockets. It is the Atlanta Hawks, who, by the way, are for sale. And this is wild because this will warm your heart. The group that's thinking about buying him is led by, and I didn't know that he's this, like, huge businessman, Junior Bridgman and Grant
Bridgman
Hill.
Owns hundreds of, like, Taco Bells or Wendy's or something like that. He has franchises all over the place.
Ray, I did not realize that Junior Bridgman, now I've heard about Jamal Mashburn doing well and other guys, but Junior Bridgman is, wow, I mean, they were in the bidding for the Clippers, but just didn't, you know, have the time and stuff like that.
Nobody
and, you know, Ballmer. Right,
sure.
And he outbid everybody, right, of course. But they are very legit, Bridgman and Grant Hill, and looking to buy the Hawks, who officially are, you know, everything with the arena and everything is on sale. And but the Hawks, 90-77 over the Pistons. 6 in a row for the Hawks, 7 in a row for the Pistons. Looks like the Hawks will continue their streak. But Just great to see these two teams.
In the league, you realize that, right?
Ray, listen, you know, we owe the Hawks.
Basically
I think we both might.
Best, right? They in Portland basically are like a half.
But
game
didn't we? But didn't we both have the Hawk? We have to look on RayandTayToday.com, and everybody else can go check it there and see how our NBA predictions and stuff. But I think we both might have had them right outside the playoffs.
Yeah,
so we owe them an apology and shame on us. And your boy Teague is averaging 17-7. Millsap is like at 2 steals and almost 9 rebounds. This team, Ray, you know, Horford with his block shots, 1.4. This team is okay.
You know, it's funny. This is the only team, if you look at it, and you really, really are true to yourself.
Not one all-star.
Not one real all-star. I mean, they might, over the course of their careers, make all-star teams, right? Horford,
yes,
and Millsap,
yes,
and Teague. But if you look at
but not
it,
a Hall of Famer, not one
no,
of the bunch.
They don't have a star. They are like the poor man's Detroit Pistons of 04-05 with Larry Brown, you know, and they won a championship in 2007. So the Atlanta Hawks, man, they follow a different formula. But, hey,
and it's great. Listen, they have 5 guys, Ray, in double figures. two guys at, you know, like basically eight a game, and everybody's participating. You know, Kyle Korver leads the league in three-pointers. Him, Horford, Millsap, Teague, and Damari Carroll, the starting five, they all average over double figures. So, you know, good for them, you know. And then you've got Schroeder and Scott off the bench and, you know, your boy Peril Antic and you know, Thabo's there, Cephalosha, Selvin Mack. I mean, it's, you know, they probably should make a move, though, to get maybe somebody that might be a little bit more legit if they want to advance in the playoffs, but it'll be fun. But you know what it is? It's a football Friday. Ray, this is our favorite time of year. It's the divisional round. It's NFL. We're down to the last eight teams. And Saturday starts with, I would say, it's becoming a classic playoff matchup because their battles have been legendary. Flacco is, 2-1 over Brady in their last three matchups. These teams have both been in Super Bowls as of late. The Patriots are favored, 6 or 7 points. And when you look at this game, I guess for me the biggest thing is, one, can Forsett run on this Patriots defense? Can Flacco not turn it over against a Revis and a Browner and his tough secondary? Can Brady, now having Gronk, and he hasn't had Gronk for a couple of these battles, can, you know, Brady be able to get it to LaFell and Gronk and really your boy Shane Vereen out of the backfield? Because Dumervilleh and Suggs are coming. Nada and Brandon Williams up the middle are coming. I think what happens is a slugfest. It'll be a battle. Flacco might outplay Brady again. But this is a different New England team. Belichick's got his corners. And I think Revis and Browner, there might be some PI, some pass interference, but I think at the end of the day, it's going to be a little bit too much in a close battle. The Patriots, for me, my Super Bowl pick against the Seahawks, they stay alive, and they beat the Ravens 27-23 in a great divisional AFC playoff game to start our playoffs.
You know what? This is one of those games that I could see going either way.
Yep.
This is a Baltimore team that's gone up to New England and punched them in the mouth and really embarrassed them. And the last time that happened was, 2-3 years ago. And I believe that that's in the back of the Patriots' mind. And the Patriots are not going to let that happen again this time. I don't believe that Justin Forsett is as dynamic as Ray Rice. And I don't believe that Flacco will be able to get the ball at will to his wide receivers against, like you said, those tough corners. Browner with that tough physical play, Perry Hansley at the line of scrimmage, and Darrell Revis, you know, may reclaim his title as the best cornerback in the NFL. So,
yeah, all pro.
I think that the ability for the Patriots to get the ball up the middle of the field and then loosen it up on the outside for their, you know, average to slightly, you know, below average receivers, I think is good enough given that they know the the Ravens' MO. I don't think that Forsett it dynamic enough to make some plays in the open field, and it'll force Flacco and the Ravens to go down the field, you know, 10, 12, 14 play drives, and I just don't think that they could do that against the New England Patriots defense that's not bad, right? So ultimately, I think that they're going to have to settle for field goals in the red zone, whereas the Patriots, I think, at home will do a little bit better and convert in the red zone. And I think we're looking at a relatively low-scoring game, but maybe something like a 23-17 Patriots 6.
Yeah, and it's going to be, 21, 22 degrees at kickoff? So that's,
nice,
you know. Now, yeah, I feel sorry for you guys on the East Coast because we've been 70s all week.
They said 200 million people, so two-thirds of the country almost were in a deep freeze a couple days ago.
Wow. That sums it up. 8:15 on Saturday night. This is the type of game where you have to sit down, and it's like you almost need to just, even if it's warm, just throw on your hoodie, some gloves, and just get ready for what playoff football truly, really is. I think both the Saturday games are like that, but this more than any. The Seahawks are hosting the Panthers, who kind of almost got away and got a break. They didn't play good, but they played against an injured Cardinal team. It'll be 47 at kickoff, but it will be so loud in Seattle, and the 12th man will be rocking. And the only opportunity that I think the Panthers – now, remember, this team, in their last three matchups, these two teams battled. Nobody has scored more than 16 points. So this year was 13-9. You've had these other games where they're close battles. But both these teams down the stretch have won, you know, like four or five in a row. Both of them have been running the ball. Both been playing great defense. But I just think the difference is Marshawn Lynch is a little bit better than Stewart. Russell Wilson can move the chains and run a little bit more than Cam. And I do like Benjamin and Olsen more than sort of the Zach Miller and the Luke Wilson, you know, Doug Baldwin, you know, receiving matchups.
Come on,
but
Dougie
I think,
Fresh?
Nah, you know, I'm being honest. But it comes down to the Legion of Boom, Bobby Wagner, Michael Bennett, Bruce Irvin. The Seahawks defense is just, they're on a mission. And the way that they're playing and the way that Beast Mode is running is great. Listen, you're never going to see a great matchup like Davis and Kuechly against, you know, Lynch. And can they contain Russell Wilson to not get those scrambles and first downs? I say for a while they can, but at the end of the day, the Seahawks win a slugfest and maybe some defensive scores on both sides and maybe a little bit more high scoring than people would think. Panthers get a touchdown and a bunch of field goals. And the Seahawks win 23-16. They won't cover that 11-point spread, which is crazy. But they will win this game and advance to the NFC Championship. 23-16 Seahawks.
I don't give the Carolina Panthers much credit at all. I think they won four games in a row at the end of the season. They were still sub-500. They got a lucky matchup to host a banged-up Arizona team. They shouldn't even be in the playoffs. I think that they are the poor man's version of the Seattle Seahawks. And like you said, other than they have Kuechly and Davis, right? But other than Benjamin and
Greg Olsen,
they're worse at every position. And, you know, I'm not a big Cam Newton fan. I think his deficiencies will be exposed. The only way that Carolina can do anything on offense, I believe, is if the referees call a very tight game. And remember, the referees haven't gone back to the all-star crews yet because I think they said 70 guys are being randomly matched together with other, you know, with referees.
Right. I think so, next week it starts with, like, the creme de la creme.
Right, exactly.
The division of the play championship.
Seattle, the only way I think Carolina does anything on offense is if the refs call it very, very close and very, very tight. And, you know, Seattle's very handsy, and they're very physical at the line of scrimmage, and it's like guarding Shaq. Every play could be a penalty.
Right, and Benjamin's so big, you could throw it up to him. That's the one benefit that I really think the Panthers have with him, you know?
Well, yeah, but on defense, I'm saying that Seattle is a nightmare to referee. So do you call every penalty that they have? Because their corners are big and strong and safeties are physical, and they play you tough at the line of scrimmage, and their linebackers too. So if you get two, three pass interference plays, and, you get the yards, and they get to play on their heels a little bit, that's the only chance. And I don't really see that happening. I think this is a blowout. And I think I wouldn't bet it, but I think they cover the spread. I think that these these Panthers can only score, I'll say 13, and I think they get blown out 27-13.
That's a good point. And the one thing that we got to mention, the Panthers have lost their young lineman, defensive lineman, star Lou, how do they say his name? Starlet Luetaluti or whatever.
Yeah,
messing up his name.
Yeah,
yeah, so he's out. So, yeah, you know, your boy Lynch could very easily put up 130 and a touchdown. But I tell you, those Kuechly and Davis, Tommy Davis and Lou Kuechly, they are incredible. So, Sunday.
This is
what it's all about. This is a battle that we haven't seen since the Ice Bowl in terms of where it's played. 22 degrees at kickoff. Luckily, they're playing this early, right? You know, if this was in the evening, it's going to be 105. So what's interesting, though, is this is one of those games that you have to really be careful. Because what the Cowboys can do – now, remember, they had the worst defense last year. The defense isn't that great this year, ranked 22nd. But because of the time of possession and running Murray, they keep the ball out of people's hands. And that's how you have to beat Rodgers. I don't like this injury, though. I do not like the calf injury. I think he will be a little limited. They're going to do some pistol, some shotgun. But what they have that they haven't had even last year – is a healthy Eddie Lacy. Lacy was a little banged up last season in the playoffs when they lost to the Niners. Eddie Lacy's healthy, and he did, you know, he's got like 150 carries less than DeMarco Murray, just to show you the difference. And I think you're going to see Nelson and Cobb get open. Devontae Adams has got to stop dropping balls and step up. But the Cowboys' defense is not ready for what Rodgers can still do from the pocket. He could be Brady and Manning. He doesn't have to scramble. He just likes to. And it creates, you know, a lot of extra time for the receivers and mismatches. But the Cowboys, ladies and gentlemen, they're not going anywhere. Okay? And if they stick to Murray, Witten, Beasley, Terrence Williams, Bryant, they're going to be in this game, and they're going to put up a slugfest and a fight. I think we got another 7-point spread. I don't think the Packers will cover it, and I think this is going to go down to the wire and be a classic. The problem is that Packer defense is ranked 6th in the nation for the NFL, and they do get to the quarterback. They will battle with that offensive line, and they, you know, they've got a guy in Julius Peppers, you know, Tar Heel, who he can still make, whether it's once or twice a game, he can still make that great play and sack Romo, strip fumble. You know, I mean, he still has that. And Clay Matthews, when they moved him on the inside, he's shoring up the run. It's going to be great. But I say all this to say I don't like Rodgers' injury in terms of them going to a Super Bowl, which we know Ray picked. But I do like Rodgers in terms of being able to – and look, something's got to give, right? They're 8-0 at home, and the Cowboys 8-0 on the road. And, you know, Rodgers is too good at home. He doesn't throw picks. The Cowboys lose. The Packers win 26-24. Great
game.
So
you got a close game.
Yes.
So
– surprisingly so.
If Aaron Rodgers weren't hurt,
yes,
I think the Packers would blow out the Cowboys.
Yeah, they'd win by 10.
Exactly.
10 to 12.
So I'm going to say that the Cowboys take a chance. Now, I didn't think the Cowboys were for real. I predicted them to go 6-10. I give a lot of credit to the offensive coordinator, Scott, and the play caller.
Yeah, Linehan.
Scott Linehan. And on the defense.
Rod Marinelli.
Rod Marinelli coming over with his defensive schemes, you know, former head coach, former defensive coordinator. And I'm going to say that the Cowboys take a gamble, right? The Cowboys, and you would never say this. Who would think this in a playoff game? They're going to try and stop Eddie Lacy, force Aaron Rodgers out of the pocket. Now, keep in mind that Aaron Rodgers is probably the most accurate quarterback maybe in NFL history, and
he's
definitely
MVP
in NFL history outside of the pocket, right?
He's the MVP.
But they're still going to do that and say, you know what? I want you to beat me. I want you to have to make a play to beat me. I know you can beat me with your arm, but I need you to beat me with your legs too. And I'm going to go out on the limb and say that Eddie Lacy gets shut down, runs for 60 or 70 yards. Aaron Rodgers has to make a play. And Aaron Rodgers, I have a feeling that calf is bothering him more than he lets on. He didn't practice. I don't know if he practiced today, but he didn't practice yesterday.
Yeah, he had a little bit of closed-door practice yesterday without the media seeing it, and they said he could not really move.
Right. So I'm going to say that as crazy as it sounds, the Cowboys tell the world, Aaron Rodgers, you need to beat us at home in Green Bay. Make a play. The Cowboys keep it close. They hold the time of possession. They make a couple big plays to Williams and Dez Bryant, and the Dallas Cowboys win in the fourth quarter on a field goal.
You're going all in. The fandom. Listen, I've been begging this man to step up and be a Cowboy fan, and it's finally here. You know,
well,
it's so funny because
like
I was going to. What's
I mean,
the score? Because
like
I was going to pick the Cowboys, too.
Dan Bailey is the most accurate kicker in NFL history. So I think Dan Bailey comes and
he's no Morton Anderson, who's up for the Hall of Fame. We'll talk about that soon.
We're talking about Hall of Fame in a little bit.
Yeah.
Baseball and
okay.
football.
What's
so
the score?
The Dallas Cowboys come back and they win the game 27-24. Cowboys. On a damn field goal with 3 seconds to go.
I love it. And this was Ray's Super Bowl pick, ladies and gentlemen. He's going against himself. He never does that on this show. This is history. I love it. Oh, man, this is great. Okay, I'm not mad at you. Yeah, no. That injury is the difference maker for me, too. And you know what? I was going to pick the Cowboys. I just, for some reason, it's just so hard for me to do it because of at home. But I won't be shocked. Now, Sunday evening, it's 4:40 kickoff. It'll be, oddly enough, the warmest game of them all in Denver, 45 degrees. It's the sheriff against the up-and-coming future best quarterback of the league. And right now he's just a hero to most. He does too much. They have him do too much because of no running game. He tied Big Ben for the league leading in passing. Drew Brees did. He was third or second if they were tied at 47-61. Andrew Luck is a man-child. And the saddest thing is that Bradshaw got hurt this season, because if they had Bradshaw – this could be a different conversation. But with Boom Herring and Trent Richardson, it's just not enough. Now, your boy Reggie Wayne will be a little bit healthier. T.Y. Hilton, Hakeem Nix, they'll be able to score. But John Elway in the offseason, he didn't just get Emmanuel Sanders. He got three gentlemen, T.J. Ward, Aqib Talib, and DeMarcus Ware from the Cowboys. And it was for this and next week's games and the Super Bowl. It was for a defense. And C.J. Anderson can run it enough. And the key to the Broncos, it's really Julius Thomas. He's almost their MVP, because if he's not right, this team's not right. And he, I think, will be healthy and right. This time off, this bye week came at the right time. Peyton Manning will be okay. They're not going to pound it and run it like they did the last 4 weeks in December. They're going to come out, and they're going to test Vontae Davis in this defense. And they're going to pass first and then get the run going. And the Broncos are going to win this game at home. Remember last time they got the lead at half, they were up 24-7 on the beginning of the season. And the Colts, give them credit, they came back. But the Broncos are going to win this one 31-24. They win by 7, and again, but they just – actually, I'll say 10. They win 34-24. The Broncos will beat the Colts, and Andrew Luck and Peyton Manning will be facing Tom Brady once again.
Okay, and I agree with you. I think that's the 1-2. I think we predicted that in the beginning of the season.
Yeah.
We still have that. And to me, I agree with you about Ahmad Bradshaw. And I also think that people are going to sit back and realize that as much as this league is about offense, when it comes to the playoffs, you have to win by running the football on offense, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have to, on defense, you still need to rush the quarterback.
And they miss Robert Mathis with that suspension for the season, yeah.
That's true.
And then his injury. Yeah, his injury.
That's true. And on defense, they've been inconsistent. Their linebackers have been inconsistent. Their corners, I'm talking about Indianapolis, their corners haven't played as well as they should have. Their running game is inconsistent. You know, Reggie Wayne is coming back off the injury. T.Y. Hilton's dropping too many passes. He's awesome.
Yeah, they led the league in drops this year.
Yeah. So Andrew Luck is fantastic, and if you want to bet on somebody for the future, bet on Andrew Luck, but not this year. I think Denver, like you said, they loaded up in the offseason to try to get over the hump, to try to get bigger, better, faster, much stronger. Now, they got older, but they got more experience, and I don't think that in Denver they're going to have a letdown. So I think, like you do as well, they'll put up quite a few points. I think they'll put up 33, and I think that the Colts will put up 27. So this will be a close game, high-scoring game, what is that, 60 points. But I like the Broncos. I think the Broncos keep chugging along, and they meet New England next week.
So the only game we have different is you went on the limb with your team and took the
Cowboys,
and I got the Packers. So we'll see how that works out. Okay, they're down to 15, the NFL Hall of Fame. They have two contributors and one senior guy. Ray and Tay, because they're going to announce it, the NFL Honors Night, the 31st, you know, the night before the Super Bowl with all the awards. And we'll do that Friday show, all the awards. But, Ray, right now, let's talk Hall of Fame and who we think will be the five players or the five people from the 15, because there's three coaches and a kicker in there. First off, the new guys, are you sort of surprised at Pace and Warner and just the different guys that have made it to this finals?
Not really. You know what I am surprised about is how many Pro Bowls a lot of these guys that are on the list have made. So, for example, close your eyes and think about how good some of these people were. So, and how long some of these people have been
right
on the list.
Oh, and first time, of course, Junior Seau, who we all knew was a lock. Yeah.
Right.
You know, Junior is just, yeah.
But think about some of these guys some of these guys on this list are truly borderline. I will say that. But I think that some guys, like, for example, Will Shields needs to be in the Hall of Fame. I mean,
he does.
He may not have been sexy, but he's a 9-time Pro Bowler. I mean, this guy was.
And
was
dominant. He was a dominant lineman. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, who do you have back there? Barry Ward and Christian Okoye. I mean, he was blocking for, you know, cats.
Well, yeah, but then he also had our boy, Priest Holmes. He was playing.
No, I know, but what I'm saying is he had guys that were like one or two hit wonders, and then Priest Holmes. I mean, but the holes were always there, and maybe a guard.
Well, he's one of the best guards. You could say he's one of the best guards in history. He's a top five to 10, yeah.
Let's go.
Oh, no. Well, see, this is what – no, you're totally right. I mean, put it like this. Okay, I guess my debate is – so for me, I definitely think it's going to be Seau or Lando Pace, one of the best – look, the left tackles that have gone in the last couple of years from Walter Jones to – oh, gosh, who was the other? Jonathan Ogden, and then now Orlando Pace – they were all in the same era and three of the best offensive left tackles ever. So Pace is going in for the greatest show on turf. I think Kurt Warner, when you think about it more and more, forget about that he only really played 16 games for 4 years, played 9 seasons, but getting to 3 Super Bowls, maybe one you could debate in terms of the potential cheating of the Patriots, but even the 2 ones that he lost to the Patriots and the Steelers, it wasn't because of Kurt. He played his butt off. And I think getting with two different franchises, that had really never really won anything. Remember the Rams, they made it against my Steelers with Henry Ellard and the boys and Vince Ferragamo, but they lost. So you got to give Warner a lot of credit and just, you know, such a dominant career, even though a short career. So Warner and Pace and Junior Seau, I mean, there's not much to say about Seau. He's, what, on the Mount Rushmore of linebackers probably with him, Ray Lewis, LT, and Buckus. I mean, you know, Junior Seau, you know, maybe Singletary, and he's a top five linebacker all time. We all know that. So those are the three. And then you got to get two more. And when you look at this list, because remember, the contributors are not involved in the 15. They're 16, 17, and 18, and Ron Wolf and Bill Polian. So that'll be different or be interesting to see if they get in. And then there's only one senior guy, Mick. I don't really know him. Mick, what is it, Timothy?
Tinglehoff,
Tinglehoff? Yeah, I don't really know.
Old center.
So I guess, you know, they normally have two guys, so he's going to get in. They only have the one. So this is the question I have for you. So if you agree with me with those three, do any of the coaches get in? We love Eric Coryell, but I don't think he's going to get in. Jimmy Johnson, you know, obviously great winning, but didn't do it for so long. So if there was a coach, I would say that it would be Tony Dungy, and he's so popular and really did so much with two franchises. Even though Gruden got the win for Tampa, that was Tony's team. And then when you look at I got to put in Charles Haley. I like Kevin Green. You know, he's, what, third all-time in sacks, 160 sacks, amazing. But and I think Terrell Davis is there for the first time. You put him in over the bus, as much as I love the bus, because Terrell Davis was so dominant. But I'll say Charles Haley with the three we mentioned, and it's between Harrison and Tim Brown. I don't think Lynch is going to get in, eventually maybe, but Harrison and Tim Brown. And I got to believe it's Tim Brown's time, right? I don't know. I just feel like Haley and Brown have waited so long. I feel like they joined the three new guys, Seau, Warner, Pace, Tim Brown, and Haley. What do you say?
Wow, interesting. See, I don't think that Warner gets in. I don't think he gets in on his first try.
Okay.
I don't think that he's a – you know how cats get philosophical. They're like, is he a first ballot Hall of Famer? He's quite on the borderline, I got to tell you, because he didn't play enough. And he didn't have enough consistent good years. Remember we did that comparison with him and Donovan McNabb. And, you know, he won the two MVPs. He went to three Super Bowls, one and two.
And
the
Super Bowl MVP,
And he was a Super Bowl MVP. So,
but he's very beloved, and I think his story, remember, they get in that room and they start talking, and whoever's talking for him and that story and just, you know, 28 and packing groceries, I don't know, Ray. And
I don't
really
think
liked,
he gets in so quickly. I think he has to pay his dues.
Okay, but you have Seau and Pace, so then give me your other guys.
Seau, Pace for sure. I think,
okay.
And like you said, the theme is it's time. It's
Tony Dungy or Harrison and Brown?
For Will Shields to get in.
Ooh, okay.
Right? Time all-star. So Will Shields gets in. It's time for Charles Haley to get in.
The only player who
has five Super Bowl
rings.
And was a contributor on all of those teams. He wasn't
dominant.
Know, the water boy. He was dominant on all those teams. And then, to me, you flip a coin between Jerome Bettis, Tim Brown, and Marvin Harrison. I think because he's been on the list the longest, I think Tim Brown gets in because of his effect on special teams and as a wide receiver.
Yeah, he was only guy at Oakland. It was just Timmy
for years.
You know,
for years,
with a bunch of different quarterbacks.
Yeah, and he did go to that Super Bowl, lost it, that one that where Gruden jumped over and coached
the
Bucs.
Rich Gannon.
Barrett Robbins goes out of Mexico, and, you know, their whole they got shook up, that whole team, and they got blown out. And
blown out.
Rich Jackson was the MVP.
Yeah.
He got a couple of picks on Rich Gannon.
With Sapp and Lynch and Derek Brooks. So you believe Lynch will join his other defensive guys in Tampa. So
he
when
might
did,
get
when
there
did,
eventually.
Does Morton Anderson ever get in? the all-time scorer in NFL history. And then what do you feel about these coaches? Does Dungy get in? I think Dungy's got to get in. Maybe not this year.
You know, again, borderline. Air Coryell, you know, he was an offensive genius. He changed the game.
Yeah, no, he changed the game. He just never won anything. See, Dungy gets in because he won, and he gets a lot of credit for that Tampa. You know, you got to give him a lot of credit for Tampa. He also was a good player when he played. I think Dungy gets in. Not this year, but Dungy's getting in. Now, how about Terrell Davis? I think Terrell Davis should get in because, let's be honest.
He's the hardest one on this list.
He's the hardest. He didn't have the longevity. He's sort of like Mattingly in baseball. We'll talk about that in a second. But just like Kurt Warner, even though it's a short career, it's such an explosive dominant. If he didn't get injured, Terrell Davis, God only knows the stats that he would have. He was amazing. One of only seven players to get over 2,000 yards. Terrell Davis was special. And he carried Elway, let's be honest.
Right. Is he Gale Sayers and Kirby Puckett, or is he Don Mattingly? You know, Don Mattingly may never make the Baseball Hall of Fame, but you and I know that.
He's a Hall of Famer.
Right.
Mattingly's
a Hall of Famer. For 5 or 6 years, he was the most dominant player, and he did it on Bullfriend, obviously. There's no.
So we both agree on Tim Brown. You've got Shields, and I've got Warner, and we both agree on Haley. So that's the only place where we differ, Will Shields and Kurt Warner. So then does Marvin Harrison, you got to believe, then he would probably get in next year then.
I do. I don't know who's up next year, but, yeah, I do. I think he gets in next year. I think he just has to keep knocking on the door. He was – you know how it's the new passing era? Well,
he was the father of that.
Ushered it in. Yeah.
Yes, he was the father of that.
Caught 144 balls 1 year, and that was 10 years ago.
I think
it's
143.
I mean?
Yeah. No, I know he's not. Yeah, he's the man. He was incredible. I mean, Ray, let's be honest. And Reggie Wayne will get there one day too. I believe Reggie Wayne is a Hall of Famer, but Marvin Harrison was amazing. I just think he might have to wait. Tim Brown deserves it. This was not. He was a special player, Tim Brown. He was not anybody's, you know, bum. And I think the proof is he did it with so many different quarterbacks. And then finally Gannon had a couple of good seasons with him at the, you know, towards the end, and he made the Super Bowl. But he was doing it with nobody's and dominating. And every year he was in the top 3 or 4 in receptions and yards. So Tim Brown, and he's got great, you know, stats.
So we got to go to
baseball. I just got to ask you one more guy. He's on the list, and he's a Steeler, and you forget how dominant he was. But does Kevin Green get in eventually? Third all-time in sacks? The Rams and the Steelers? He might have to get in, Ray.
D.A. fizzled a little bit at the end of his career, and now he's coaching. He probably does. He probably does because sacks have become such an important part of the game, and if you can rush the passer from the linebacker position or from the defensive end position, he does, but he'll have to wait. He'll have to wait a while.
He'll have to wait, and you're the third best of doing it. So let's talk about baseball. We got to congratulate those four gentlemen, three pitchers and a second baseman. So Randy Johnson, Pedro Martinez, John Smoltz, starter, reliever, I mean, just amazing, and Craig Biggio. I want to ask you, because even though Randy Johnson had the most votes, and, you know, it's sort of silly how these guys do their ballots. I don't know if you heard the story about the guy in Cleveland. He was like, oh, I didn't vote for Pedro because he was ornery and he beat my Indians in the playoffs. Are you kidding me? Take the ballot
should,
from that
you
clown.
You know what? You should take away his voting immediately.
Yeah, take away the ballot immediately. That's so stupid because you can't say because he beat your team that you're not voting for him. Now, listen, I heard Howard Reynolds said, look, there's 10 guys you can vote. So he didn't vote for Pedro and Randy because he said they're going to get in. So let me give my votes to Jeff Kent and, you know, Mattingly. And that I can accept more than you saying you don't vote for Pedro.
That. You know what? I can't accept that.
Yeah.
Your job is to do one thing. Put the
vote for who,
player or less on
your
ballot. Stop politicking.
Stop playing a game. Yeah.
Stupid. And then like these people are like, oh, you can't be a first ballot Hall of Famer. What? If you're a Hall of Famer, you're a Hall of Famer. Fill in your ballot and let's go. Stop overthinking it and trying to play games and jerry-rig the system. Put down your best players.
Definitely. And you know what? And what's funny is that Randy Johnson, all those years with the Mariners, he played with the Yankees and, you know, six different teams or whatever, but he might go in as a Diamondback, you know, winning the World Series out here with Bob Brenly. We spoke to him about it on our show, and Curt Schilling and, you know, Gonzalez. I want to ask you, though, I think for both of our monies, because we're Yankee fans and knowing the era of steroids, when you look at 1999, Pedro Martinez, and I didn't remember this, not only was his ERA 1.74, the average in the American League was like 5-something, and the second best with Roger Clemens was 3.06. That is dominating. I mean, that's amazing, Ray.
Well,
I mean, Pedro
this.
Was the man. He was the man.
Let me ask you this. If you had one inning to pitch, and it was that everybody had to rest, and it was the seventh game of the World Series, and you needed to win it.
Yeah,
who's
no, Pedro.
Your guy, Smoltz, Pedro, or Randy Johnson?
Nah, I got to go with Pedro. I love Randy, and he just blew smoke. And Smoltz, he had a little bit of everything. And I love how he went to the bullpen and went back to starting. He was amazing. But I never... I mean, this guy was, what, 5'10", 5'11", 170 pounds. You know, he's not that much bigger, or he was just around the size of Mariano Rivera.
He's a Jerry Curl juice.
Yes, basically. Pedro Martinez was – he almost had that Bob Gibson feel to him. He was so intimidating, and he just – he could do stuff on that mound, man. Pedro was – he was dynamic. I got to go with Pedro Martinez, and, you know, I don't like the rest. I don't want to say hate, but we're not Red Sox fans. So Pedro made me respect him, you know what I mean? So now, how do you feel about Biggio? You know, I don't love Biggio, and we'll talk about next year too, because next year Griffey comes up and Trevor Hoffman. But then, you know, close on the ballot this year was Piazza, Curt Schilling, Tim Raines, and Bagwell. So Biggio gets in. You know, one of the best second basemen of all time. Jeff Kent, to me, has got some better numbers than him in terms of power. But Biggio, longevity, and, you know, the catcher, the second baseman, I guess he's a Hall of Famer, good hitter, great hitter. I don't love it, but I respect him. You know what I mean?
He's a Hall of Famer, you know why? Because of longevity. And again, I hate to do this, but the guy we always said, you know, was put up there was Don Hudson, right? Are you a Hall of Famer because you won 300 games? Because you won 15 games a year for 20 years. So you get a lot of credit for being in the game for 20 years and having longevity, but were you ever dominant? Did you ever dominate your position? So that's the one beef I have a little bit with this longevity thing. But I do believe that Craig Biggio was consistently one of the better second basemen in the game.
Oh, yeah. Him and Jeter led the league in hits so many years, like, you know,
yeah,
for the AL
okay
and the NL.
Craig Biggio being in the Hall of Fame. I think
definitely.
Say,
he is.
He's a Hall of Famer in my book.
So for next year, though, so I brought that up. Ken Griffey and Trevor Hoffman. I don't know how you feel about Hoffman. We both love Griffey. But now, look, this is the first time in 60 years four guys got in. So the only time five guys got in, which was the first year of the ballot. So next year, how many do you see? Do you look at Griffey, Hoffman? Do you see it's finally time for Piazza? Curt Schilling moved up the most, 10%. Piazza's continued to move up. And then are Bagwell and Tim Raines, are they Hall of Famers?
You know what? I have a feeling Rock Raines does not make it in the Hall of Fame. He's always going to come up short. Bagwell,
he was good.
There's the
Tim
rumors of the whole, you know, steroids, which, again, it spilled off on Biggio, too.
And there's rumors about Piazza. The guy wrote the book. So I think Piazza – I don't know. Like, this is weird, right? Because – we both feel, and they got a little bit more percentage, but they were, you know, they were what, like fifth and sixth. Bonds and Clemens still, you know, they're on the ballot, and, you know, they're not, I don't know. I don't know if they're ever going to get in. But look, to me, we both feel that Clemens and Bonds were Hall of Famers before they started juicing. The problem is this whole era, and then Edgar Martinez is interesting as a DH. Will he ever get in? So I don't know. And then you got Mussina, Alan Trammell. I don't know. Next year, if you had to say gut, who would you put in? Griffey, Piazza?
Griffey and Hoffman, of course.
Okay, so Hoffman, you feel he's a top – he's up there
I
with Mariano and Eckersley.
Rivera,
one of the best relievers, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, what, 500 saves? Yeah, he's in. And
okay,
Griffey.
So Griffey and Hoffman. Now,
yeah,
any of these guys that came close this year, do you say Piazza or Bagwell?
Piazza. I think Piazza.
Okay. So maybe it's just three.
Revolutionized the offensive catcher. I mean, you know, Johnny Bench obviously did it on both sides. But Mike Piazza for years was a, you know.
What about Schilling, though? Does Schilling get in? Great playoff
great
pitcher.
Great
this is his fourth
season.
Year. I mean, you know, he had 39%. He was clutch. You talk about giving somebody the ball. You give Schilling
right.
the ball.
Phillies and Diamondbacks, right? He lost in Philly with the Phillies.
And the Red Sox.
In the early 90s.
Yeah.
And then, right, and then
the
he
Bloody
went to
Sox.
And then Red Sox.
04, yeah.
Oof, you know what? Maybe momentum will continue and he'll get like, I mean, he's better than Jack Morris.
Yeah,
you know,
I mean.
Yeah, Schilling's a tough one. But, yeah, Schilling's probably Hall of Famer. Maybe not next year, but I would say within the next 2-3 years, Curt Schilling makes the Hall of Famer.
Okay, so then this is the other question. These guys are further on the list, but I just got four guys. Kent, Mussina, Edgar Martinez, and Lee Smith. Do they ever get in? Lee Smith was pretty dominant for a while. 14 years he's waited.
Lee Smith was dominant for a while, but they always seem to disrespect relievers. So I don't think I think he doesn't get in. Mike Mussina, believe it or not, in my mind, never dominated. He had two or three, you know, really good seasons.
No.
In
he's
Baltimore,
not a Hall of Famer to me.
But he's not a Hall of Famer.
You never saw him and felt like you're watching a Hall of Fame pitcher.
No, and in the postseason, he never dominated like the Yankees expected him to. Jeff Kent stole that MVP from Barry Bonds because the media liked him better. He had a good year. It was neck and neck. I could argue Bonds could have won that MVP. Didn't dominate for enough years. He had that one great – it's hard to say an MVP doesn't make the Hall of Fame, but I'm not sure. The only reason you put Jeff Kent in is because at second base, again, kind of like
his stats are crazy for second base.
For a second baseman, right, second to Ryan Sandberg, or maybe even better than Ryan Sandberg offensively. So that might get him over the top. So sort of the Mike Piazza treatment, where Mike Piazza is such an outstanding offensive catcher that you don't really worry about his defensive deficiencies. So not sure he gets in the Hall of Fame either. And who was the fourth? So it was
Edgar Martinez.
Edgar Martinez. You know what?
What a hitter.
Edgar Martinez makes the Hall of Fame, but Big Poppy does. Because Big Poppy won three titles, right?
But Big Poppy's got steroid stuff all over him when he was in Minnesota and then comes to Boston. He had, like, no type of homers. I don't know about Big Poppy.
And he was on that list, and then suddenly the hush-hush went away. So you're right.
I can't put Poppy in. I can't put Poppy in. I would have to put in Edgar Martinez. If you're talking about a DH – I mean, Edgar was a professional hitter. Now, you want to talk about hitters. You know how I loved, like, Albert Bell. But this guy, he's on the list, and he's not getting too much love. It was only for his second year. But, you know, in terms of a hitter and an assassin with the bat is Gary Sheffield. Gary Sheffield was a baseball player, and he only got 11%. Now, I like Fred McGriff and Larry Walker. I think they were both the Hall of Very Good, so I wouldn't put them in. And I really good players, right? But what about Gary Sheffield, right?
Yeah, he's got, what, 500 home runs, right?
See, I mean, come on. Gary Sheffield was legit.
Yeah, Sheff's my guy, but – and he was so devastating with that bat.
And he got
–
does he have
team.
Two – doesn't he have two World Series rings? Florida, and then did he win with the Yanks? Was he on that team with Rodriguez? No, okay, he came after. Yeah, he came after. So he has one ring. But Gary Sheffield was, and he was a clutch hitter.
You know what? He made a lot of enemies. So unfortunately, if he's on the fence, he's a not here. I just pulled it up. 9-time All-Star, so that's got to be worth something. 5 Silver Sluggers. He was a batting champion in 92 and a World Series champion in 97. He
there
played for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 teams. But you know what? He made too many enemies. So I just think on politics, he might not make the Hall of Fame.
That's a shame. But, you know, look, it's fun talking Hall of Fame, a Hall of Fame Friday show. Congrats to the Atlanta Hawks. They continue their win streak. They hold on to beat the Pistons 106-103. You know, NBA's rocking. You've got the Wizards spanking the Bulls. We'll be talking more NBA. Monday, Ray, it is the national championship preview. We'll reflect back to one of the great college football games ever, championships ever, with USC and Texas. Oregon, Ohio State, we'll break it down. Mariota against Cardale Jones, and we will break down the divisional round in the NFL playoffs. It'll be a fun show, and like always, Ray, it's going to be a good sports weekend, man.
Oh, it's going to be a great sports weekend. We'll see you guys on the other side. Enjoy yourself. If you're anywhere near the East Coast, stay warm.
Yeah, you guys stay warm, man. You know,
stay home to watching football.
Yeah. It is definitely East Coast. It's there's good reasons to stay home. And listen, before the NFL game, you got, what, Louisville against North Carolina, and I forgot, Kansas is playing somebody, and there's some good college basketball games. So, people rip college basketball because it's, you know, so many teams make the tournament, and, oh, it's not fun till March. There's some good talent out there. There's some good games. So enjoy some college hoops, you know, have fun. Enjoy sports, man. Life is too hectic, and our prayers from Ray and Tay go out to everybody in Paris with the loss of that tragedy, Ray. We got to send a shout-out to everybody there. So everybody be safe, be careful, stay warm, and Happy New Year, and just thanks for listening
weekend.
And talking sports. Yeah, talking sports with friends. We're out. Peace.